where dad and daughter talk Trek. I'm your host, Bridget Kelly.
And I'm Ned Stark.
No, I'm not Ned Stark.
I was just looking. He's dead. I know he's dead. I was just looking at the table, and I saw winter is coming. Actually, spring is coming. And I thought, well, you know.
No sighs from the audience, please.
What better?
Well, welcome, Dad, to Los Angeles, City of Angels. Yeah, we got some people in Los Angeles in the audience. That's right. This is our first. This is our first live podcast here.
Not over the internet. The dogs are here as well. Los Angeles has been very kind to... Well, actually, Los Angeles has been very, very good to me.
Oh, how good have they been, Dad?
It's been so good that it's rained the first two stinking days we were here.
That's right. And I believe you made a new friend here yesterday, right?
I did make a new friend. I did. Yeah. Okay, so, this is the part of the podcast where we talk about current events.
Right.
And in our current events, yesterday we went to Chinese theater. We went to the Chinese theater, which is a beautiful freaking place. I loved it. You know, it's what a movie palace. It's great. But they were also setting up for Bridget's favorite time of year, which is...
It was the Oscars!
Yeah. So we were outside, and then there was all these reporters and, you know, cameras, lights, action, red carpet. We walked on the red carpet. It was covered in plastic at the time, but we still walked on it. It was great. And so we're like, I'm walking along, minding my own business, and this person walks up to me with a microphone, and the other person with her had a TV camera. And they walk up to me, and she sticks the microphone in my face. And she says something, and it was, she had a pretty thick accent, so I'm guessing she was part of the foreign press corps. And I couldn't really identify. It was vaguely Mediterranean, maybe Italian or Greek, I'm not quite sure. But yeah, I couldn't really understand, so I asked her, do you please repeat that? And she said, what do you expect from the Oscars this year? And I said, I don't know, I never watch it. And she went, oh, well, I never watch it either. But what do you think of all of this? I said, oh, it's a beautiful place. So...
let me tell you from my perspective what happened. So basically, we're leaving the Oscars red carpet, and somebody shoves a microphone and a camera in our face, and so Mom and I just walk away. We're like, no, don't want any of that. And then Dad just goes, I'm sorry, what's up? Yeah, you want to talk to me? Okay, go ahead.
I was being a pleasant Midwesterner.
You were being very nice.
I was being a nice Midwesterner here, out here on the West Coast.
Well, in LA or in California, it's state law that if you're on camera, you have to sign a waiver. So I did notice that they did not run after Dad and ask him to sign a waiver.
So chances are I will not be on Italian television.
Probably not be on Italian television.
But I might be on Italian television because, frankly, it is Italy, and who would know? Anyway.
And then we went to Trader Joe's, and you saw...
At Trader Joe's? I didn't see anybody at Trader Joe's. We were
looking. You did not see Miles O'Brien.
We did not see Miles O'Brien. We were, you know, although we did run on the freeway yesterday. We think we saw Stan Lee in the car next to us. I'm positive it was Stan Lee. You know, he was in a Mercedes, a white Mercedes. Stan, if you're out there, you know, give us a call.
Yeah, sure.
Would you like to introduce our guest?
Yes. So this week on Talkin' Trek is very special. We have a special guest. He comes all the way from Orange County. And he has been watching Star Trek for 50 years, most likely. Yeah. Please give a round of applause to Uncle Bill.
Thank you very much.
I appreciate it, and I'm very happy to be here today.
Oh, good.
Absolutely. I'm excited. This is good. And, of course, I chose today's episode.
That's so right. Extra you special did. For me. What episode are we doing today, Bill?
The City on the Edge of Forever.
That's right.
It's the ultimate fan favorite for the original series.
Yeah, is that why you chose this episode?
No, because it's also my favorite show for the original series.
It's your favorite episode.
Absolutely, yeah.
Okay.
I was 18 years old when I saw it first.
Oh, yeah?
That's right.
Yes, in the past episodes of this podcast, we've referred to Uncle Bill as Bill Shatner. That is not the Uncle Bill that is here today. My Uncle Bill.
This is Bridget's Uncle Bill.
Your belly button Uncle Bill.
This is Bridget's Uncle Bill. My Uncle Bill Shatner.
This is Dad's.
You know, because I feel so close to the Shatman, that I watch everything he does, even the Huffman and Crump commercials that he does, which are awesome, by the way. He gives a performance tour de force on those. They're telling me to wind it up. I'm just kissing a little Shatner butt. The guy's going to show up on our show someday, I want him to be here.
All right.
I would like to see that. All right. So when he shows up here, I am coming back from Orange County.
There you go. And the Uncle Bill, Duel of the Fates.
There you go. The duel of the Uncle Bills.
Two Uncle Bills in the same room. This will be great.
Anyway,
so hey, Shatman, if you're out there.
Well, I'm glad you chose this episode because I knew that it was also one of Dad's favorites. Yeah. However, what's funny is that I definitely thought it was going to be the doesn't Kirk time travel as like a Nazi at some point, or
no, they just show up on a Nazi planet.
Right.
They show up on a Nazi planet.
Yes.
So I thought
another Star Trek officer goes rogue on this planet, and he wants to change the culture there, and he introduces Nazism,
National Socialism,
National Socialism.
Similar. Somebody going rogue or whatever, and they have to go save him.
Yeah,
so I watched this episode being like, where's all the Nazis at?
I love it.
Whoops.
That's good. Well, at least you were excited about the Nazis.
I just thought it was going to be the episode that I thought was good.
This is not. This episode really is the beginning of the time travel, what is it called? Milieu, so to speak.
Yeah, is this the first time travel episode of Star Trek?
It's the first time travel episode of Star Trek.
Yeah, it's season one-ish. Like episode 28 or something.
Almost at the end.
End of first season.
They did go back in time for 3 days in the naked time, which was like one of the first two or three episodes.
Yeah.
And that was just because they slingshot it around the sun. This one is the first time travel episode where history was changed and blah, blah, blah. And, you know, and that's a whole thing that happens in a lot of TV shows now. History gets changed and then we have to go back in time to fix it.
Oh, yeah. Did you say that was like the first time this was on television? Weren't we talking about that?
Well, this was the first time I ever heard a swear word on TV.
Oh.
1968.
Well, spoilers, then.
Spoiler alert.
I don't know. We'll just cut the last 5 minutes out of
this. we'll get to that later. So, City on the Edge of Forever. Let's go through the plot. Give us a rundown.
So what they're doing is, you know, the entire episode opens up, and it's on the bridge. The shot is on the bridge, and they are being knocked around. They're being jostled back and forth. And you can't figure out what it is, but you know something's happening outside the ship, which is causing this problem. So they're attempting to figure it out.
Yeah.
And it's a setup to introduce what's going to happen next.
Yeah, because everyone's rocking around.
Right.
Yeah. And Spock is saying, well, what we're going through is ripples in time, and they get hit by one. And our favorite character and mine, Sulu, gets like, you know, sparklers in his face.
Right.
And he goes down. Right?
Yeah.
Okay. So now Sulu's on the ground.
Yeah.
they're still trying to figure out this ripples in time thing, and they call Bones to the rescue.
Bones, Sulu's knocked out. Help him.
Basically that. So Bones shows up. He says, "Oh man, it's a heart flutter. I never heard of a heart flutter before. It's a medical thing.
Yeah,
it's medical.
Is that like butterflies in the stomach?
It's the wishbone. It's like the guy in Operation. He was having a heart flutter.
Yeah.
And he says, I better try a few drops of cordrazine.
Oh, wait, what was that? What was that drug called?
Rob Cordrazine.
Oh, right.
I think that's what that was called. Hey, here's another guy we could have on the show. What does Kirk say?
Well, Kirk as the captain, is always second-guessing everything, so he wants to double-check his medical officer, and he asks, hey, that's some pretty tricky stuff. Are you sure you want to do that?
And then Bones comes back with, after he shoots up Sulu.
So Bones is like, watch me. And he shoots Sulu with this drug, and of course Sulu all of a sudden is like, hey, I'm great. You know? He was basically of the body again.
Now he's jumping back up, and he's right back on his feet. Right.
Right.
And then Bones says, you were about to offer a medical opinion. Well, here's the
Captain.
Thing.
Yeah, no, more like, I'm sorry, I need to requote that.
Okay, requote it.
Bones more likely turns to Kirk and is like, you were saying.
Yeah. That's right, he does say that, yeah.
You're about to make a medical comment, Jim.
Is that going on the wall of quotes?
Yes.
It is.
Put it on the wall of quotes already.
Okay, we'll skip the wall of quotes then later on. But now he's got a full hypo spray of cordrazine.
So the ship knocks him around even some more, and then Bones shoots the entire syringe into his belly.
By accident.
So how did you feel about Kelly's performance at this point? murderers, assassins.
Well, at that point, of course, number one, Scotty took over for Sulu, and he was warning the fact that they were losing control, that they were going to have some type of an issue, so that obviously the people who are watching could say, uh-oh, something's going to happen. And then Spock warns everybody, oh, here comes a big one. It hits immediately and knocks McCoy off his feet. He accidentally knocks it into himself.
So everybody's warning.
And at that point, no one knows what the effects of this cordrazine is going to be.
Sure.
They don't know what's going to happen, except McCoy jumps up like a madman and starts screaming, murderers, assassins, you're not going to get me, and that type of deal. Which I thought was interesting, because when it happened, everybody stood back and let him stand up. Let him run to the turbo lift.
Exactly.
Okay.
Exactly. I
he's
had a little problem
screaming,
with that too.
He's screaming bloody murder that everybody's going to kill him, and he looks like he's about ready to jump everybody. But what does everybody do? Oh, they all stand back. Give him room.
Well, it was like he had the flu. You know?
Yeah.
They went like, don't cough on me.
But the plot of the show is, they have to stand back and let him go, because he's got to escape.
Oh, sure.
Water. Because then Spock comes back and tells everybody, oh, one of the side effects of this cordrazine in large doses is the person becomes disoriented and seeks to escape.
Mm.
So that sets up the plot on what is McCoy doing?
Escaping.
He's trying to escape. So into the turbo lift he goes, and everybody goes like, okay.
I thought that was a
notify security. I mean, it's like,
I thought that was kind of a weenie thing too, by the way. I mean, if you watch that scene closely, when McCoy jumps up, Spock kind of like flies back and flails his arms a little bit, and I'm going like,
Spock wouldn't flail.
I thought he was, I thought he would have been a little more forceful, in that altercation. Mm-hmm. But he just kind of, it was very weeny. It was, they didn't really work on their stunts very well.
But I gotta say,
well, they had a lot of the episode to get through. So.
But I gotta say, the weeny part comes after repeated viewing of the show.
Well, that's true. That is true.
When I saw
fast.
The original show,
it happens fast.
Yeah, 18 years old. It went bam, 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 and it seemed natural that he could escape because he was a madman. He was under drugs, and everybody didn't know what to do next. And into the turbo lift he goes, into the ship.
Right. And then he's out the door, and he goes and makes his way to the transporter room.
Mm-hmm.
And in true 60s fashion, he karate chops the transporter chief.
Yep.
Everybody gets a karate chop back in the 60s.
Karate chop.
And immediately gets knocked out.
Spock's the only one that doesn't karate chop anybody, but everybody mm-hmm. else gets it.
He gets the Vulcan pinch.
Well, he gets the Vulcan pinch. And how many Vulcan pinches do we get out of this episode?
Well, at least one.
Oh, there's two, right?
Well, there's at least one.
Well, there's two. Yeah, there's two. Okay. I think there's two.
There's two.
Well,
yeah, there's two. I wrote two down.
Yeah, yep. She wrote two down. So there you go. Your notes.
Hey, thank you.
Excellent.
These are the notes, folks.
These are the notes.
But the situation is, at the same time Spock is saying that a person under this drug seeks to escape, where is Bones? He's in the transporter room escaping.
But where's the security detail guarding the transporter room?
They got karate chops.
They all got karate chops. Wow, shoot, man.
They weren't trying to guard the transporter room because nobody knew what Cordrazine would do.
Oh yeah, but he was trying to escape. So
even if there was a security
In a Federation starship at that time in the history of
that was another
the Federation.
Everybody
should have been trained to know that.
That was another thing. On another episode of Star Trek, Kirk was left alone on the ship all by himself.
Mm-hmm.
And he got mad and furious because he couldn't operate the transporter by himself. So he couldn't transport down to the planet because everybody had evacuated the ship.
Mm-hmm.
And he wanted to go down there too because he was under the influence of these spores.
Mm-hmm.
So if Kirk couldn't transport himself in that episode, how the hell did Bones transport himself in this one?
Well, I'm assuming that the medical officer needed to know how to function himself to get himself down to the planet if there was an emergency.
Well, maybe the captain
he could get to another ship.
You needed two people to do the transport. You need the guy. You had to be in the thing. You couldn't just push the button and run.
Not when you put it on the lay button. I mean, all of those things are assumed things because it's just moving. Step, 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 move.
I get it.
So McCoy beams down.
It's a pretty tight episode otherwise.
It's a pretty tight episode.
Yeah, I'll give it that.
So McCoy beams down to the planet and then they send a whole crew after him.
A landing party,
which there were so many red shirts, I thought, somebody's definitely going.
There were some dead going.
There was definitely some dead.
There had to be at least three or four red shirts.
There were four. One was Uhura and one was Scotty, but then there were two unknowns, so I thought, oh, here we go.
But then
we see this rock formation that starts speaking to the landing party. I am the Guardian. Yeah. Or this right. is Landru.
No, it's not. He was not a computer exactly all Landru, along. No, this was the Guardian of Forever.
I am nothing and everything.
Well, he was,
I am computer and alive.
He was both and neither is what he was. He was the Guardian of Forever.
He was both and neither.
And the Guardian of Forever, I guess guards forever. He was a time portal.
That makes him God.
Oh, really?
If he guards forever, if he had neither a beginning or an ending, he was God.
Okay.
A machine was God.
But he was on a planet that had ruins that were only 10 million years old.
10,000 centuries.
10,000 centuries.
Well, what's 10,000 centuries?
10,000 centuries is a million years.
1 million?
It's only 1 million.
What, 10,000 with three more zeros?
Two more.
100 is two more.
100 is, but there's three digits.
There's a hundred. That's not how math works.
But the one is one.
I put three zeros. Three zeros.
You put two zeros on the end and the one.
You carry the zero and the one.
Everything else is just one.
I'm an artist. Math is not my subject.
Anyway, it's cool.
Do I have a lifeline?
Yeah, no.
Can I call Mike?
No.
She already did it on her calculator.
I cheated. I didn't know my guy yet.
It's too late.
So,
it's only a million years.
But that's right. You're not paid to do math.
No, I'm not paid to do math. No, I'm not paid for this at all.
So anyway, so this Guardian of Forever is a big arch rock. Where it's like, so under the arch,
it's a donut.
And inside the donut hole, he makes, he brings up a television of, and shows all of Earth, because Kirk is standing in front of him the most, so he's like, human, here's Earth's history. And so they show Earth from the dawn of time
What they do is they show every silent film that was ever made.
Yeah.
Beginning with the cavalry, the American cavalry.
There was like the Civil War.
You see the Romans, the Egyptians.
You saw Ben-Hur, I think, is what they were showing, Ben-Hur.
Which we were saying, if the Guardian is forever, and he's the beginning and the end.
He needs the beginning and the end.
Then that would be a God thing, but...
It should be a God thing, except while that is playing, suddenly McCoy comes running out, murderers, killers, and they have to subdue him. So they're drawn away from the Guardian of Forever, and they want to subdue McCoy in order to get him right. So that's the Vulcan... Vulcan.
Oh, that's the first.
Pinch.
We got a first neck pinch, everybody.
First neck pinch. Okay, and McCoy goes right out onto the ground, and then immediately, mysteriously, they all turn their attention back to the Guardian of Forever. And they're watching.
It's a television show.
It's
like going to a bar
in black and white.
Yes. Well,
all the TV shows in black and white.
But when you're at a bar, what do? You like watch the TV. Right. You don't want to do anything else.
So then the captain, of course, being the most ingenious and most inventive person, that's why he's the captain.
Well, yeah, absolutely.
Something comes up with the idea. Spock. Can we use the Guardian of Forever and take McCoy back yesterday? And then we can avoid this whole Corbazine accident? Well, I'm sorry. It's really just going too fast. So what happens? They ask the question. Can you slow this down? And the Guardian of Forever, who is...
He's not God because he can't.
Suddenly he can't slow it down because this is the way I was made.
So
he does have a beginning.
He's a lying son of a
probably promotes himself a little. Promotes himself a little more than he actually is.
Somebody else we know.
No, we're not. This is a thing-free zone.
Yeah.
Thing-free zone.
So anyway, so McCoy yells, "Assassins!"
See, this is what she does. This is what she does. She pokes at you. And
yeah,
but
she can.
Oh yeah.
She can. It's her show.
Oh, okay.
Hey. Thank you.
She's in charge. Daughter is in charge. Okay. Niece is in charge. As uncle.
So McCoy yells, "Assassins!" and jumps into the donut. And,
you forget what happened next.
Which is incredible because they've left McCoy with the Vulcan neck pinch.
Well, he woke up because he was full
of cortisone. And suddenly he wakes up because he's full of cortisone.
Oh, yeah, sure, he can survive.
No one is watching him. No one has subdued him. He's not in handcuffs. He's not restrained in any way. Because if he was, he wouldn't be able to run through and jump.
He's got to escape.
He's got to escape.
He was neck pinched. Everybody who gets neck pinched is out for days.
Yeah, but...
Not a Rob Cordrazone guy.
So now he goes in, and what happens? It goes blank. Everything goes blank. It's like, what happened?
Yeah, or they can't get...
Where does he go?
They can't raise the ship. They can't do anything. They're like, what happened? What's going on?
They've got to ask the Guardian, what happened? Well, he went into the past. Everything that was is now different.
Oh, yeah. And then then Uhura hears, guys, the Enterprise isn't up there anymore. Right.
Oh, check that. So, check that, Scotty. Scotty's got to go.
Oh, he's got to check with the woman. Make sure the woman's correct. Right.
I'm sorry. Yeah. Well, I'm sorry, Uhura. You're the communications officer, but Scotty, you double check that.
She was a woman in the 60s, and we didn't want to take her word for it. I'm not saying it was right. I'm just saying that was what happened back then.
But so they're like,
marginalized.
So friggin' McCoy goes back in time and yells assassins. We don't know what he does, but he apparently stops the existence.
It would seem the word assassins can stop existence as we know it. But, so don't ever use that word in public.
But thank your lucky stars that Spock realized what a fool he was and started recording human history prior to Bones jumping through the donut. Okay?
Right.
The donut
right.
hole.
Right.
Boom, and going out. So now he's got it. So now he's got a
record.
He's got a record of what's going on. Absolutely.
Well, you know, and here's the thing about that. So he's got a record up until the point that Bones jumps. And after Bones jumps, because he's still recording.
Until history changed. Till the moment comes in which history has changed.
That was when Bones jumped, right?
No. Bones jumped. Okay? Don't forget it was going fast. Then he jumped in and then stopped.
He saw the new history.
Centuries could have gone by.
Right.
Centuries could have gone by. But as soon as Bones did something that caused all history to change, it stopped.
Right. Oh, wait a minute. Oh, no, now that makes sense. Because maybe he had a history book on there from the original history to compare to the new history that he was recording after Bones jumped.
I know, but here's the problem. Why didn't he just keep playing the new history so that they could follow it through? He had the tricorder on. The tricorder could record, Captain, at this speed.
Well,
no problem.
He could have recorded and found out that they actually fixed it and not have to go back at all.
Correct.
Oh, well, there you go.
But
end of story. It was a good show.
Unfortunately,
show.
End of story. 15 minutes into the show. We got another 45 minutes to go.
Yeah.
It's a critical factor in the story because the tricorder has recorded history as it was. When Bones jumped in and then something stopped history that they had on the planet, the Enterprise goes away, everybody stays on the planet, maybe because their proximity to the Guardian of Forever, I don't know.
Oh, that's probably it. And maybe they were in like a time bubble.
And that's why
they didn't know what was going to happen.
So now it's, can you replay it? Because they're going to have to go back they're going to have to fix it.
They decide to
if
do
they
that.
Don't fix it.
They decide to do that.
All history has been changed forever.
That's what they
this is a critical,
which,
this
okay,
is a critical factor.
Which, by the way, what event was happening on the screen that they jumped to?
He didn't say.
You know
say.
What I mean?
We could theorize.
It had all that the fog coming down and
it was
the steam and all that.
But in the history of the world,
it was,
why would
world.
You go to Brooklyn in 1930s
it was,
depression?
It was after it was after World War I because we were watching World War I and people running around with guns and stuff.
Yeah, but then why wouldn't it go to Germany or whatever?
Okay, well, but there's the second factor in the story.
That's the other thing.
Second factor of the story is now they're replaying it and Spock is watching what's going on.
Uh-huh.
And he has to figure out when to jump to get him there, wherever it was, within a week of when Bones went in.
Yeah.
It turns out they were
they jumped in and they showed up in New York in the 1930s or Depression era. Okay, that's when the genius theory of, well, you know, he asked Spock, Kirk asked Spock, what happened? He goes, maybe we're going to be not even close to him. Maybe he's going to be in China or something like that.
Right.
No. Time moves in ripples and streams, and the same current that took Bones to wherever it is should take us to the same place. it's convenient.
Yeah.
It keeps the story going.
Keeps the story going.
I mean, you have to do something to keep the story
However,
going. However, so there's nothing wrong with that.
If many years later in Voyager, there's a time ship from the Krenim race.
Yes.
And the Krenim commander. It's hard. Say that three times real fast.
Krenim commander.
You know, okay. He said, time has moods and colors and flavors.
Mm-hmm.
You know, sometimes it's pistachio, and then sometimes it's, you know,
Rocky Road.
Right.
Yeah, but that's in the Delta Quadrant.
Oh.
Yes?
Isn't time the same throughout the entire
universe? It might not be. Okay.
Yeah, I'm just curious how, you know, how that fits within the, and I'm going to say it, Star Trek canon. Okay.
The expanded universe.
Oh, the Star Trek canon. This doesn't fit.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway.
okay, so now they're back there.
They're in the 1930s in the Great Depression.
Spock and Kirk are wearing their Starfleet uniforms, and so they're a little
out of sort. My favorite
scene.
One of my favorite scenes. Go for it. Go ahead. You tell.
Okay. I mean, he's got to. They walk across the street. They almost get plowed into it by a car. Oh, we've got to do something.
Yeah, we got to change our
Here's
clothes.
Here's the clothes. Oh,
we'll change our clothes.
Captain? Well, you know, we'll steal from the rich and give them back later. So he goes, steals the clothes.
Steals somebody's
great,
clothes. Off the clothes
paraphrasing
line.
Robin Hood.
And then, you know, it's a good thing that there aren't any policemen around. And what shows up?
A cop,
right. Absolutely.
My favorite line is, I see you're a policeman. I recognize the traditional accoutrements. I love that.
I have to say, when I was 18 years old, after that show was over, I had to look up the word accoutrement. What is accoutrement?
I recognize the traditional accoutrement.
Oh,
I love that.
It's a little piece
that.
Of food that you eat before dinner.
It could be. And then, of course, so to get themselves out of it, the other half of that scene, which is cool, the cops go, like, putting him up against the wall. He's going to frisk him.
Mm-hmm.
Well, what's funny is that they're like, we got to explain Spock.
Oh, that's funny.
But,
it's
like the cop didn't go,
hey,
dude, what's
those,
up? Yeah, how,
dude, what's
how
up
about
with the ears?
Those ears?
Yeah, you
know. So Kirk just decides to just out of nowhere explain the ears.
Yeah.
And then he, of course, he's...
Well,
Spock
told him... Captain, you were the one that said you were going to explain
you
it.
You said it was going to be...
maybe it was that
explain.
Accident, you know?
Yeah, well, that's what's so great. Well, first he's like, China. He's Chinese. He picks rice because that's what Chinese do.
Yeah.
Which was terrible. And then Spock was like, oh, God, Kirk, shut up. But no, it was a childhood accident.
Yeah,
it was an unfortunate
Spock was like, you know, feeding him a little bit. Well, perhaps the accident.
The unfortunate accident. I remember that.
He says he got his head caught in a mechanical rice picker.
Yeah, that's what it was.
And then, of course, there was a gifted plastic surgeon nearby.
Yeah. And then, of course, the cop is just like, for the love of God, shut up. All right.
Okay, up against the wall.
And then here we get...
And then it comes...
The second Vulcan Atkins.
You bet. Oh, your wife lets you go out that way? All right. So now...
Very untidy. Let me help you with that.
The pinch is supposed to put you out for a long time, right?
Right.
So they grab their clothes and they start running down the street to the sound of what?
Police whistles.
Yeah.
Well, maybe
another
cop down the road and saw him like laying there.
I think Spock was
slipping.
His touch.
You think he was slipping? He could have been slipping. Well,
he kind of knocked him to the ground, but he didn't put him
out.
That's
he just
sure.
jumped back like 200 years. That's got to take a little bit out of you. That is a quantum leap.
Boom!
Taking it back.
Okay.
Star Trek
Enterprise. Here we go. The captain of the Star Trek Enterprise. Quantum leap.
Synergy. It's called synergy.
So they hide in a basement that is owned by
Joan Collins.
Joan Collins.
I thought her name was Edith.
Edith.
Oh, you meant Edith Keeler.
She was a Keebler elf, yes.
Edith Keebler.
I suddenly got lost there for a minute.
No, I'm talking about the actress.
Was she British, or was this old-timey? She was supposed to be British? Okay.
Well, she wasn't supposed to be in the show, but she was actually a Brit. Yeah.
Well, don't forget, British people were in New York.
The audience is saying yes, she was supposed to be British.
And Joan Collins, she was also in, you know, one of those primetime soap operas from the 80s. I can't remember which one, but she was in Dallas or Fantastic Voyage or something like that, whatever it was.
Cool.
So that's really her big claim to fame. She's on Will and Grace now.
She was on Will and Grace.
Really?
I saw, but I don't know.
She's got a great career. You can be on the show.
Yeah, she's had a whole lifelong career, everybody. But this is in the beginning.
She hasn't been on our show though.
But anyway, so as we say, so she hires Kirk and Spock. Well, you know what? If you guys need a job, why didn't you just say so? You can sweep my floors and whatever.
Yeah, but she was running the 21st Street.
Oh, right.
Wait, was she running a soup kitchen?
I'm sorry. I just got a note from the audience.
Does it matter? They
must have Googled this. They GTS'd this one.
Okay. Oh, what was the show she was on?
Dynasty. The show was Dynasty.
Never heard of it.
The SS Minnow.
James SS Minnow.
But she was running a place for homeless people.
Yeah, she was running
giving out free food and drinks and things like that.
But it wasn't free.
Yeah, they had to listen to Goody Two Shoes talk about straightening their life out.
Stop drinking
and all that other stuff.
Right.
But she had that mindset of, okay, you know, Kirk was honest enough to say we stole these clothes and the police are after us. Oh, okay, now she's a sucker for a hard luck story.
Mm-hmm.
You can come to work for me for 15 cents an hour. Holy
15 cents. Well, it was 10 hours a day, so that was a buck and a half.
Yeah.
That was good.
And at that time, two is $3. And at that time I was making $1.18 an hour, which was interesting.
Well, between
1930 and 1967,
a dollar
difference an hour.
Yeah.
Dollar difference.
Wow.
Anyway, and here's what I thought was interesting.
go ahead. What'd you find interesting?
This is what I thought was interesting. Okay, you know, most soup kitchens back in those days were run like by people like the Salvation Army.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Okay. And when they gave a little bit of a talk, it was always like a spiritual revival kind of a, you know, tent revival kind of thing. And they were, you know, talking about getting your life back on track and, you know, let's all pray and stuff like that. She must have been the church of, I don't know, something.
Well, wait a minute.
Well,
wait a minute. Star Trek couldn't have had, you know, anything in their show that promoted this religion or that.
Well, she could have been a Unitarian, for crying out loud, which is fine. You know,
it doesn't matter.
I love Unitarians, but the point is, she could have been something more. Yeah, she could have been something more generic religion.
She was generic. But instead, it was the generic of Edith Keeler.
The generic religion of spaceflight, because she started talking about, you know, oh, the future is going to be so bright. You're going to need shades, you know?
Yeah.
She's like going on about, you know,
One day they're going to travel to the moon, they're going to harness the atom and all this other stuff.
And I'm going like, well, hey, that was an interesting conversation, but here's the thing, and this is why I think she had to be this kind of person, because Jim already was getting the lovey-doveys for her.
He was hot. All she had to do was walk out. Hey, Spock,
I think she's a very interesting person, and I would like to get to know her.
I find her most uncommon.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. That's what he said. That's exactly what she said. So he said. So, yeah, that was interesting. So, earlier on, when she walked out in on them in the basement, they were having a real good Star Trek moment. That was a great Star Trek moment when they were, like, bantering, Jim and Kirk.
That was a really good banter
because Kirk says, Spock's saying, well, you know, I've in this thing is, you know, what Bones did.
Correct. In the tricorder.
Mm-hmm. So he's looking at the tricorder, and he said, but, you know, I can't slow it down because I don't have the ship's computers. And Kirk says, well, can't you build a computer aid in this culture? Mm-hmm. And in this time? And Spock says, in this zinc-plated vacuum tube culture?
Mm-hmm.
And then the best line was Kirk going, oh, well, I'm sorry. I'm afraid sometimes I think too much of you. It was a beautiful line. It was like, you know, trying to push Spock without pushing him.
Well, it was a good action to take in order to get Spock involved in trying to figure out when Bones was going to show up and what they were had to do in order to keep him from changing history.
Well, yeah, and he was challenging Spock to figure his way out of this stuff, and because Spock was like, there's no freaking way I can do that.
Unfortunately, back on the planet, when he was recording it, the tricorder could record at that speed, the very fast speed.
But it couldn't play back.
And then when it played back, he was watching it. We'll get within a week. Get ready. He's reading everything on there. Get ready. Boom. And then they jump in. But now he's on the planet. He's back on planet Earth. Okay? And what happens? The tricorder doesn't work. So he needs to construct a computer.
Right. But here's the thing. I think the tricorder was still working. And I think maybe he was... Now... It goes back to another Star Trek line. This in one of the movies, actually. Spock says he's going to. Well, I think I can estimate this, right?
Mm-hmm.
With possibly, you know, sometime real close.
Mm-hmm.
And in what was it? Voyage Home. Spock, the now reanimated Spock, says to Kirk, "Well, I don't have all the figures, but I will make a guess." Mm. And Kirk goes, Spock, a guest. That's amazing.
True.
And Spock's like puzzled, and Bones comes over to him and says, I don't think he understands. Or Spock's saying, I don't think he understands the gravity of this whole guest thing. And Bones says, Spock, you know, he's saying he trusts your guesses better than most people's facts.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that was what was going on here.
Mm-hmm.
He guessed when to jump.
Mm-hmm.
But when to find out exactly what Bones did, he definitely needed to slow it down enough to be able to see precise moments in history.
Okay. I'll
so
buy
that's
that.
What that's,
I'll
the, buy that's that. The way I
you've,
took it.
You've convinced me.
Okay.
All right.
Okay. That's weird. Mm-hmm. Let's go on. Oh, wait a minute. We jumped back, and now let's jump forward.
Oh, no.
It's time travel. It's a time travel thing. Yeah. We jumped back in time to discuss that part, but now we're jumping forward in time.
Well, but now they're in their room, and he's got his Tesla coils.
He's got Tesla coils.
His Frankenstein's lab.
And he's got vacuum tubes flashing and all that other stuff. And what happens?
A Faramir, not a Faramir.
I said his Frankenstein's laboratory.
Yes, it was Frankenstein's laboratory.
He made a computer out of...
stone knives and bear skins.
What he
said actually was...
I'm endeavoring to construct a mnemonic memory circuit using stone knives and bear skins.
Yes. Well, actually, yes.
Which, I'm sorry, is a violation of the Prime Directive.
He's mentioned
mnemonic memory circuits to a person at that time, and it's a clear violation.
Yes, but you could tell by the look on her face. You could tell by the look on her face she didn't know a freaking thing that he was talking.
The Prime Directive doesn't care about that.
Well, here's the thing: there was no temporal Prime Directive at this time.
There was.
No, there wasn't.
In February of 1967, there was a show in which they introduced the Prime Directive.
Right, but not the temporal Prime Directive. There's a difference.
It doesn't matter. It was the Prime Directive. And then in April of 1967, there's A City on the Edge of Forever, in which they violate the Prime Directive, which reads, no identification of self or mission. No interference.
Star Trek fact.
Excuse me. No interference with the social development of said planet. No references to space or the fact that there are other worlds or other civilizations. I'm sorry.
Oh, wait a minute. He missed then he did it. Spock. Then he did. Oh, he not just Spock, but Kirk did it like three times during this episode.
I'm going to get to those. I'm going to get to those.
Okay.
But whoa. Spock violated the prime directive. He later on he changes it to radio work, okay,
yeah, right.
And then
he's
trying to in trying his
my
hobby radio
hobby.
Work, which he's trying to save himself. But he was a clear violation. The man should have been court-martialed.
That's
my opinion.
It's
my opinion. I'm just throwing it out there, okay.
Mem's fighting wives.
No.
No. It's great. It's
there's nobody to court-martial him because there's no Starfleet. It's gone.
There will
well,
be.
There will be, yeah,
well,
when they find
only if they're successful.
Only
if Kirk
successful.
Is always successful.
Whoa.
You know that.
Big words.
Well, yeah, I'm just saying.
Okay,
just
saying. So
what's next?
So they're in the whatever.
No, wait. She says.
But the next step is Spock sees this guy working on radios and on watches. And he needs those tools in order to do his radio work.
Instead of just asking to borrow the tools,
he breaks into it.
Nobody loans anything to anybody on Earth. You know that.
Not during
the 1930s. Yeah, absolutely. No, you don't loan your tools out. Sorry, Ben. Sorry. When I was in the factory, I had to have my own tools. Nobody loaned me tools.
Right.
So then she comes and confronts them that he broke into this place. And Kirk tells her, listen, if he said he needed it and he's going to return them, that should be good enough.
Basically, yeah, you can bet your reputation on it. And that was another, you know, that was like Kirk showing some love
right.
for Spock. He was like, you know, he was saying, Spock, you're my bro.
And he melts her.
I'm behind you.
And he melts her because automatically, if you say so, you know.
You two are such good friends.
Yes.
Well, there you go.
Okay, and I'll let him go if you walk me to wherever she was going to walk.
She had to go home.
So they went and took a walk.
Now,
what happened when they took the walk?
Let me help.
Go ahead.
No, you go ahead. You go ahead. There you go. Bridget, you go ahead.
Mm-mm. You guys are on a level all on your own, so why don't you guys just go? I have this brotherly connection here.
She understands.
I'm just going to let you guys continue.
Okay, so they're on the walk, and she says, I understand it, you know, if you want to keep it to yourself and all that other stuff, I just thought that you would let me help. And then Kirk goes, oh, those are very important words. And you know, like, they are? And he goes, oh, yeah, 100 years from now, a person is going to write an entire thesis or philosophy using those words,
what?
Let me help. And she's kind of going like, what? 100 years from now, what are you talking about? And he goes, oh, well, you want to hear something silly? And she goes, yeah. He goes, he's going to write it on another planet. And it's and he's looking up at the sky. And he goes, oh, it's a planet right up there going around that star. And she's looking at him and going like, yeah, right. I'm sorry. Number two, prime directive.
Well,
violated the prime directive.
Well, here's the thing.
He talked about another planet. He talked about to a person who is obsessed with space travel and atomic energy and all those other things. And he's planting into her brain something that shouldn't have been there.
The other thing about that
it's a violation of the prime directive. Kirk should have got his
far left star on Orion's belt. Doesn't have any inhabitable planets. it's not even a main sequence star.
In 1967, it did.
Well,
nobody knows what happened to those planets between then and now.
Well,
but in 1967,
100 years later,
in 1930, they did. Okay, there were planets.
I don't know. I'm just saying. I think if it did have planets around it, at the level of discovery that we are making of planets around stars,
mm-hmm.
we would know that there was a planet around that particular star, and I'd have to GTS. To find out which star that is.
We didn't even know until last year that there was a planet around Alpha Centauri.
Well, that's true. That is true. See, there you go. But, you know, we could figure it out. We can.
Okay, but I want to make the record.
It's not
Rigel.
It's not Rigel. It's not Beetlejuice. But I can't remember what the name of that particular. You know, it's not Mizar or Alcor, but it's one.
But the record should be clear that he's violated the Prime Directive.
Well, yeah.
And why?
Yeah.
Because he's becoming emotionally involved. Ooh. We all know he's becoming emotionally involved, and that is. Messing up his command decision, ability to make command decisions.
That's another thing about Kirk, though. He falls in love, what, every third episode?
Pretty much.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know, would you date a guy that fell in love every third episode? No, I don't think
so. What's next?
Well, I'm not talking about you as a wife. I'm talking about
the point that you wanted to get to earlier. He's looking at the tricorder, and what does he see?
He sees the article about mm-hmm. Edith.
Mm-hmm.
Well, first he sees an article that says she died.
She died.
She got hit by a car.
In 1930.
In 1930.
Right.
But then it vanishes, and then we see a new article mm-hmm. about Edith that says that she...
conferred with the president.
Yeah, she met with the president.
In 1936, 6 years later.
Right. So... Oh. And then right when he says, hey, what's going on?
Could be safe.
The computer goes up in flames.
Yeah, it goes up in flames.
So right. He has no way to tell which article is the true article.
And they did not have a fire extinguisher.
Correct.
Yeah, I'm just pointing that out.
They just
out.
Let it fizzle out.
Well, they hit it with a blanket or something.
Yeah.
I'm just pointing that out as the son of a firefighter.
That's all.
So then it's Spock. You're going to have to get this thing running again. You're going to have to tell me. We need to know what decision to make. Does she die?
Or does
How
she
is
live?
McCoy involved? Or does she live?
Does she die or does she live?
So.
Should she stay or should she go now? So now we're
at the focal point of
if she goes, it could
the
be
conundrum.
If she
conundrum.
Stays, it could be double.
I'm thinking. But it was double that if she stayed. That's true. That is true. It was double because the Nazis showed up. It always boils down to Nazis. In this.
Yeah, I know, but it's the focal point of the entire story.
Well, yeah, that Nazis showed up.
And Kirk doesn't want to do anything. Why? Because he's emotionally invested in Edith Keeler.
Right.
I don't want to talk about her dying. I don't want to talk about her.
You want to stay
I want us to find McCoy first. Okay?
He wants to stay there. He wants to stay there and be lovey-dovey, bunk on the head.
Yeah.
Okay,
so, that's what he wants. Somehow, maybe McCoy won't even show up. We don't know. Okay,
yeah.
And then we'll get married and we'll have a cottage out in the suburbs and all that other stuff. You see what I mean? That's what's going mm-hmm. through his freaking brain.
But then...
Not his brain. He was not thinking with his brain at this point.
He was thinking with his brain.
No, he wasn't thinking with his brain at
the
this point.
The only brains he had.
I'm going to go call my therapist real quick.
Ay, ay, ay.
So that's exactly what happens. This is when McCoy shows up. Yeah.
Yeah. You must find out before McCoy shows up so he knows what to do.
And right. then...
He can't do anything unless he knows what to do.
Then we cut to this man on the street stealing some milk.
Mm-hmm.
And McCoy jumps out of
nowhere.
Nowhere, yelling, assassins!
Murderers!
Murderers!
Killers!
And this guy with the milk is just like, what are you doing here?
He stopped drinking the milk and was like, whoa.
Is this pretty much what you're going to do today?
Yeah, that's pretty much it.
Yeah.
Although
at that point, McCoy actually threatens him. You over there, what planet is this?
Yeah.
So the guy goes like, boom, I'm out of here.
Yeah.
I think that would freak me out.
Yeah.
If somebody ran up to me and said, what planet is this? I think, I'd be freaked.
Yeah.
Anyone
yelling on the
like,
street.
I'd be like, hey, buddy,
not
you know, sometimes you drink a little more, too much of that wood alky and you can, you know.
Oh, yeah, that's what they said.
That's what
he said to him, yeah.
But I did love the whole thing about, you know, when McCoy's going like, biped, great cranial development.
Human species, genomes, and all that other stuff.
You have considerable human ancestry.
Good cranial development.
Like what?
Bones is mad tripping, right?
He's definitely tripping.
Yeah, but then he melts down because he starts thinking about it. If this is the 1930s, then they're cutting people and they're using needles, and he can't stand thinking about that.
Medical technology.
And he passes out.
Yeah.
Okay. That always makes me pass out.
But then what happens?
Well, I love this part.
Uh-huh.
Because it shows another conundrum of Star Trek.
Uh-huh.
He picks the bum, picks Bones' pocket and grabs his phaser.
Right.
Okay. Now, we do remember that Bones grabbed a phaser from the chief, the transporter chief. Why the transporter chief was running around with a phaser, I don't know, but he was. He was armed and dangerous.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so the bum takes the phaser, and he's like fiddling around with it, you know, kind of like me and my camera sometimes. How does this stupid thing work? You know, he's sitting there looking at it, and he accidentally hits a button, and he glows blue and disappears.
Disintegrates himself.
Well, he disintegrates himself.
Yeah, he disintegrates himself.
Now, 200 odd pounds of flesh and bone.
Uh-huh.
Suddenly disrupting, at the very least, vaporizing.
At the quantum level, it completely disintegrates.
Would that not have knocked down a few buildings?
Well, the interesting thing about it is the phasers were supposed to disrupt the body, and of course, there wasn't a cloud of dust and all that stuff. I mean, it just zapped them right into some other universe
Something. He just deceased to exist.
Including the phaser. Now, how can the phaser...
destroy
itself.
Well, it was on
while
overload.
While it's destroying the man.
It was on overload, because every time the phasers back in those days, when they went on overload, you got that sound, you know? And that's what happened. So it was on overload.
Okay.
And that's, he flipped it to overload, which is what they used to do when they turned it into a grenade, basically. They would flip it to overload. But I'm just wondering, you know, the amount, if you turned a 200-pound person into pure energy...
Mm-hmm.
Just what would that do?
Yeah, but all phasers were focused on a narrow range.
Yeah, but
they zapped a lot of people who went out in the entire building, and the Enterprise or the whatever ship they were on didn't disintegrate.
What I'm wondering, why didn't when you vaporize somebody, why didn't they just, you know, take out half the block? Because that was a lot of energy being expended to turn up 200-pound. I digress.
Well, they could. Apparently, maybe they couldn't destroy that much at every episode. They had a budget.
Okay.
They had a limited budget.
Okay, that's true. This was a backlot.
Yeah.
They didn't want to take down the... Okay, Bridget's like going, you're digressing. Go ahead. it's all good, she says. No, she's not. She's going like, this is stupid. Move on. Okay, we move on.
Oh, so...
Moving on.
Edith finds McCoy on the ground?
Well, McCoy, like a magnet, finds himself going to the 21st Street mission.
Because he was meant to be there.
He
was predestined to be there.
That coffee really smells good.
He
collapses. Mm-hmm. She takes him. Takes him in the back room or whatever. Just as Spock shows up and doesn't see any of it, doesn't hear anything with his Vulcan ears.
He didn't hear his voice. He didn't. But which brings an important question: if Bones shows up there,
mm-hmm.
like he was supposed to,
mm-hmm. ripples in time.
Okay. Then do we actually have free will, or was he predestined?
He wasn't predestined. The occurrence had already the incident had already occurred in the future. When he jumped through
in the past,
this is the now. Yeah, I know. But as soon as he showed up here, then he followed previous destiny was.
Well, that means predestined. Yeah, he was predestined to show up there.
Right.
But, and another thing that I want to just briefly mention, I've got to check this out. I really do, because that mission, the street where that mission was on.
Mm-hmm.
In the doorway, mm-hmm. looks an awful lot like a same street that was used in the movie The Great Escape, where two guys were being chased by Nazis. Again, with the Nazis.
Yeah.
But I think it was the same back lot.
Yeah.
used in, you know, in two different movies or two different TV shows. Or one was a movie, one was a TV show. But it was, but if anybody out there can figure that one out,
please. I'll look it up.
Okay. Yeah, look it up. Look it up.
Okay, but now what's the next step? We go back. We find Spock. Spock is suddenly
he fixed
everything out. He fixed the computer, and the tricorder is working just fine. And it's very clear that she causes the Nazis to win World War II. They developed the atomic bomb before everybody else.
And he says, "Jim, I got it."
Right. But also, she died 6 years earlier in 1930.
So. They're deciding at this point in time that that Edith is the focal point, and that she has to die because if she lives, the Nazis are going to take power. But the more important part of this whole scene is Kirk coming into the room and pulling a Riker. When he sits down, he pulls the chair around backwards and then sits down with his legs spread and goes, "Okay, tell me what you're doing." It was the famous Riker sit down.
Sure.
It was great.
It's a Star Trek.
So my question is, did Riker steal that from Kirk?
I would say the writers probably wrote it in.
No, Riker. This was supposedly a Rikerism. Supposedly Riker came up. Frakes, help me out, Bridget. Did Frakes come up with this by himself?
I don't know. I assume so.
Thanks.
He's clever.
This was comedy gold that I was going for here.
Oh, how did he come up with it?
Never mind. Moving on.
Okay. But I have to question, and this is what I think led them to come up with the time prime directive. Okay. If he was recording on the Guardian, from the Guardian of Forever, the image.
Okay.
And it showed that she died in 1930.
Mm-hmm.
And McCoy went back after she died.
Well, before she died and stopped her from dying.
Yeah, but how could he have gone back before she died?
Here's where,
and then she's still alive six years later.
It's one or the other.
She either died or she didn't die.
Here's where I said earlier that I think on the tricorder, which, you know, had a teraquad of gigabytes, okay, he must have had Wikipedia. Okay, he had Wikipedia on there. Shout out to Wikipedia. He had Wikipedia on there. And you know, so Spock was comparing what he recorded from the encounter with the Guardian.
The initial encounter.
Yeah, he was comparing that to the Wikipedia article on Edith Keeler. Look her up. She's probably on Wikipedia. Okay. I'm guessing.
Very convenient.
Edith is, she's on there.
Okay, and very convenient.
I'm just saying.
That's all right. No, I'm just saying. That's fine.
If he's got a computer in his hands, it's the future, he's got to have Wikipedia.
The only way he could have recorded it is if he recorded it before McCoy jumped into it. And then recorded it again after.
Well, he recorded
two recordings.
Well, he was kept recording after Bones jumped.
Yeah,
and he saw the movie.
Yeah, she died in 1930. She wasn't dead
when McCoy jumped.
Okay.
And obviously after McCoy jumped, she wasn't dead because she changed history.
Okay.
So, but I'm saying he compared the recording that he made to the Wikipedia article on Edith Keeler, and that's all he needed to do.
So how do we get to the point where Edith admits to Kirk that there's a Dr. McCoy?
I think that was the walk when she says...
No, it was another
when she
walk.
Points
was
at the, they went on walk. A walk again.
Right.
Because he says something about space or whatever, and she's like, "You sound like my friend."
Correct.
Oh.
And
No. She said, "I want to go to a Clark Gable movie." To Kirk.
Right.
And Kirk goes, "A who movie?"
Okay.
That's when she said, "You sound like my friend," because Bones didn't know who Clark Gable was either.
Yeah, she had said the same thing.
And she's like, "You sound like..." Oh, everybody would have known who Clark Gable
was. Okay, so when did they have that conversation? they had the conversation on the other side of the street.
What was the setup?
In which he says, "Oh, who movie?" And she says, "Oh, you sound like my friend McCoy. Leonard McCoy? Yeah. Okay. Stay right here." He commands her to stay right there.
Well,
Why? Well, he has to, because she has to walk across the street and get hit by the truck. All right, so he runs back across the street. Spock! It's McCoy. McCoy comes out, and now
and
we come to the very point.
And they have a beautiful, like, bro embrace where they all hug.
Oh, they did. Yeah. It was a
they
big
one. They love each other. They're so happy to see each other.
And then it's Edith. And where is she? She's in the middle of the freaking street with a truck coming down. Does he save her?
So here's the question.
Does he let her die?
So here's the question.
Yep.
Did she die originally without Bones and Kirk just by walking across the street? Or did it take Kirk walking across the street with her and running back to Bones for her to walk back and get hit by the truck?
Correct.
Who died first,
right.
The chicken or the egg?
Right.
That's my question.
Did the fact that Kirk and Spock and McCoy were all there is what caused her to die? Or there was no McCoy, there was no Kirk, there was no Spock. She just walked out of the mission, walked across the street, got hit by a truck.
Well, exactly. But in this particular case, she left the mission earlier than she would have if they weren't even there.
Correct.
Because she must have walked out of the mission later. Maybe she got stopped by the bum with the phaser.
Yeah.
He was there going like, "Hey, lady, you got another cup of coffee?"
Well, also,
and it kept her like that much time.
So she could get hit by the truck.
Because she was trying to get to the movies.
Well, what if originally it was a different guy?
To me all the time.
It was a different guy that hits her.
Yeah, but
and
that guy wasn't there.
A whole new guy that lost,
been.
That like was, maybe his
been.
Life was ruined because he just ran this woman over.
Because without Kirk, she wasn't going to the movie. Kirk was taking her to a Clark Gable movie.
Yeah, or she could have been going by herself.
She could have been going by herself.
She was a sassy, independent woman that she would have gone by herself.
But that's the conundrum.
Well, you know why she was sassy
travel.
And independent? Because she kept doing that with her hair. Did you ever notice how she was always flicking her head?
Okay, her hair bothered me. Because it was so 1960s. But it was clearly a 1930s. It was 1930s, but it was clearly 1960s hair.
But yeah, she kept like
makeup
flicking her
hair,
head. She
so
kept
Kevin
flicking
Bruce
her head. You know, that was her Hermione Granger eyebrow thing. You know, I mean, you know, Hermione Granger.
When she was really young,
she acted with her eyebrows.
Yeah.
Love you, Hermione Granger. What's your name? Emma.
Yeah.
Right. Emma, I love you, Emma, if you're listening.
Okay. But
point
that's the tragedy of the entire show is.
That she kept flicking her hair like that.
She gets hit by the truck. Kirk stops McCoy from saving her. I could have saved her, Jim.
Yeah.
Okay.
He says.
And in Spock says, he knows.
Yeah, I know. I know.
He knows.
That was a good headshot, you know, because it was camera one, camera two, camera two.
But that's the emotional tragedy deal.
Right.
You know, and it should have taught Kirk not to fall in love.
Right.
Captain,
he should remain professional. And,
right.
He didn't learn that, but he should have learned.
He should have. Well, because they fixed history, they get sent back through the Guardian of Forever.
They wind up back and everybody's happy.
Yeah, and then Scotty is like, you know, "Captain, you just left 5 minutes ago."
Exactly.
And
the Enterprise is up there.
Yeah.
Hey. We're all back to normal now.
Except, shot of Kirk, he's heartbroken.
He is.
Okay.
And here it comes. The first time I ever heard a swear word on network TV. Let's get the hell out of here.
Okay.
He said hell.
If this had not been Star Trek, the original, if it had been Star Trek Next Generation, Picard would have said... Put a notice that everyone should avoid this planet so that they don't accidentally change history.
That's a great what would Picard do?
That's what Picard would do. Absolutely.
Natural.
Yeah. That's That's exactly what Picard would do. Because they did that in other episodes.
I think Picard would never have fallen in love to begin with.
Yeah, I think so too.
There wouldn't have been any emotional, because Picard
he fell in love a couple times, but way
he less. Was with different women, different kind of women. You know, much more independent.
It would have been.
And they were only dalliances for him.
It would have been a different show.
Another wow, guys.
Two ums.
That was an emotional ride. That was an emotional episode.
At this point, I'd like to thank you both for inviting me on here. I've had a lot of fun.
It's been a great show.
I've had a lot of fun doing this.
But we're not done. It's time for interesting Star Trek facts.
Okay.
did you hear that? Did you hear that?
Yes.
You do not want interesting Star Trek facts? Come on!
I've got one.
Our listeners
are waiting.
This
whole episode is an interesting Star Trek fact.
I've got one.
Yes.
I've got one.
Go for
another
it.
Picard moment.
Oh, great.
He's at court-martial, and they bring up the fact that he has violated the Prime Directive on 9 separate occasions.
See?
And then he has to defend the 9 occasions. Uh-huh. During his trial, his court-martial trial.
And this was not the only time that Picard was on trial.
No.
He was on trial the very first episode of Star Trek Next Generation. Mm-hmm. But he was there in place of humanity.
That was Q.
On trial.
And all that
in front of my favorite judge and jury.
Yeah. Q.
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 Yeah.
Right.
Gotta love Q. John, if you're out there.
Gotta love Q.
You know, we invite you on the show
Q.
anytime.
Go. Oh, okay. Baby,
but that was
Q.
But
Q.
That's
Q.
my Star Trek fact.
That's a great Star
Fantastic.
Trek fact.
Fantastic.
Let me look at my notes.
Wait, what did I say? The Kirk and Spock relationship. They're at the end of their first season,
mm-hmm.
And I thought this episode really solidified. Yeah, we talked about their banter. Sometimes, whenever Spock would get, annoyed,
mm-hmm.
Kirk would kind of make fun of him, mm-hmm. and, like,
annoyed
oh, Spock. Yeah.
You're not supposed to be annoyed. You're a Vulcan.
Yeah, so the stuff like that I thought was really, it was a great color.
I think, as a 1 hour, 54-minute TV show, the script was tight. It was really tight.
Yeah.
It moved along.
Yeah.
You know, yeah, we found holes, plot holes, but who cares?
They're doing exactly what they do today, and the story goes right up to the last 10 seconds, and then boom, the show is over.
It was great, and it had some pathos, some ethos, and some morthos. Mm-hmm. It had all of the doses, and it was good.
And I've got to say, as an 18-year-old, when I watched that, I said to myself, "This is the best TV I've ever seen."
Yeah, and there wasn't.
That was after Twilight Zone, which I loved. Twilight Zone, mm-hmm. But when Star Trek came along, that all changed. My concept of what's possible changed.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Cool.
That was Star Trek.
Man, cheers to Star Trek.
And really, that's why we are talking Trek today.
There we go.
50 years later. There we go.
And what about
one very minor Star Trek fact?
Okay.
That we learned during this episode.
Okay, go ahead.
Okay. When Kirk or Spock was building the mnemonic memory circuit out of stone knives and bearskins, Kirk walks in with a grocery bag. Spock says, "Captain, I need a small block of platinum." 5 or 6 pounds at least.
6 pounds.
5 or 6 pounds. I needed to pass circuits through it as a mnemonic memory core and blah 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 blah. Real good Star Trek babble.
Yep.
Okay.
Agreed.
Great Star Trek.
Slow it down. You're trying to slow it down.
Yeah. Great Star Trek babble. Yeah. However, Kirk says, "Mr. Spock, in this bag, I have assorted vegetables for you, a bologna and a hard roll for me." And nowhere. And the other 9/10 of what we have earned in the last 2 weeks has been spent on your stuff. What we find out there is Spock's a vegetarian.
Yes.
Shout out to vegetarians. Hey, let's hear it for vegetarians. Shout out to
the intelligent life forms are vegetarian.
No, he just doesn't like meat. So anyway, but and neither do any Vulcans don't eat meat. They haven't eaten it in thousands of years. But we don't find that out until another episode, quite further down the road.
Hey,
but this is where it was established that he's a vegetarian.
Well, speaking of raising a glass, It's time to raise a glass to our fallen red shirt.
Okay. Who's the red shirt today, Bridget?
Well, I thought about doing Transporter Chief.
He didn't die.
He did at some point.
Not in this episode.
And okay, or Rodent, who...
Okay, well, Rodent...
He is a character that showed up just to annihilate
himself.
So I say...
He had a line.
He had a scene. So did O'Hurley.
Okay.
So I say we raise a glass...
Here's to Rodent.
To Rodent.
Here's the Rodent.
May he rest in
technically person. Not a red shirt, but yeah. That's just my opinion.
Well, do we have any questions in the audience? You know, this is a live show. Is there anything that you guys want to ask about the episode?
Crickets.
I have a quick question.
Oh, yeah. Here,
but I think you answered it.
Well, come over to the microphone. All right. Let me hand the microphone off to you.
Hi. Yeah.
What's your name and where are you from?
Eric, originally from Iowa. Shout out to Iowa.
Oh, yeah. Any Iowans here? Oh, great.
I think we're all Iowans.
Well, I think you guys actually might have answered this, but I did want to ask it directly because it was a little confusing to me. So Spock's recording the time portal, and he's taking all these pictures. Mm-hmm. McCoy jumps in. The Enterprise goes away. Mm-hmm. Hypothetically, none of them should exist anymore, but we say that they still survived because they were on the planet, maybe in a time bubble or something?
In a time bubble, probably, yeah.
So why does the recorder still work / exist? Because that was in the time bubble too?
Yeah. It's the only way the show could go on, because technically, if the Enterprise went away...
Yeah,
Kirk. Yeah, all of them should have gone.
Yeah.
There may have been Spock. Might have still been there because Vulcan was still there, but the rest of them should have been gone.
And using your logic, if the tricorder went away, so would their underwear. So you know they still had their underwear. I'm thinking, correct?
One of these things is not like the other.
Thank you. It's been an honor.
Yes, thank you.
I don't know. Is there underwear in the future? Question. I think there is.
Thank you, Eric. Let's give a round of applause for Eric. That's good. Good man. He's cute. I like him.
Just
anyway.
Okay.
You say, thank you so much, Uncle Bill, for being on the show today. Yeah.
It was
great.
Fun.
It was great to
Had
have.
A good time.
Another voice, and you've seen this. you've seen this episode many a time. So can we give Uncle Bill a round of applause?
And I hope the people that review it, the people that listen to it, have enjoyed it as much as I have.
Yes. Yeah, in fact, everybody, if you want to rate and review us, go right ahead on iTunes, Talking Trek. You know where to find us. Send us some love if you're listening.
Send us love. Don't. Okay. No. This is a no troll zone. Okay.
Live long and prosper.
I can't do that. Okay. I can't do that.
Apparently, Dad can't do the live long and prosper.
Okay, that was going to be an interesting Star Trek fact later on in the series. But now you outed me. You outed me. Seriously.
My brothers taught me how to do it by doing. I stuck bottles and glasses between my fingers until I could do it.
This is what my kids do to me all the time.
Double fisted.
Yeah, I know. This is what my kids do to me.
This one took away.
Four people double fisted. Joe fingered
the
other. Just to clarify, we're doing the live long and proud. That's what that is.
Four people can do it with both hands. Joe, zero hands.
I need rubber bands. I need rubber bands. If I had a rubber band,
you just have to do this for a couple days straight, and then you can do it.
No. This finger just doesn't work. I had an accident as a child. I got it caught in a mechanical rice paper.
But luckily, there was a skilled surgeon nearby.
And he fixed that. But now I can't do that. You know, that's the way it is.
All right, Dad. What do you say we end this thing?
Make it so.
Wait. Hold it. We forgot to announce our next episode, which is Deep Space Nine, Trials and Tribulations, Season 5, Episode 6. Whew, that was a close one.
Yeah. Is he a real red shirt?
PB Cone.
It's debatable.
Bunch of fucking bullshit.